America is under ideological attack. And as ideas have real consequences, this could be the end of our nation as we know it. Find out how and what to do about it on this special program, Defend America 2020.
I think the degree to which we have forgotten our history or abandoned it is the degree to which we're living in chaos today.
There's an effort to destroy everything that was great about Western civilization. They're rewriting the history of the nation, and the end goal is to destroy America and its institutions, particularly the family.
America's foundation was from the start intended to be a biblical vision of society and life.
Our nation is under attack from within, and the 2020 election may well be the decisive point in the battle. What's at stake is whether the founders' ideal of ordered liberty in a free America will be subverted and replaced with radical leftism imposed from on high. On this special program, we will expose the radical left's attack on the very foundations of our nation and show the stark choices that lie before us. We begin with an investigation on the left's attacks on God. Here's our own Dr. Jerry Newcomb.
We must consider that we shall be as a city upon a hill. The eyes of all people are upon us.
The city on a hill reference that comes from Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount was a vision for what America could become.
We don't have a king as a sovereign. We, the people, are the sovereign. Our rights come from God, our Creator. And therefore, we, the people, retain all of our rights.
They were operating out of that consensus. They believed that freedom was only truly possible if laid on those kinds of foundations.
America was founded by people seeking religious freedom, but the atheist philosophy of Karl Marx has become quite popular today among millions of Americans.
Karl Marx himself identified Christianity as one of the chief impediments to the establishment of globalized workers of the world uniting. The core of Christianity is hope. Any ideology or philosophy, especially the theology of Christianity that gives people hope, is diametrically opposed to an atheistic or an agnostic Marxist worldview.
There's been a multi-pronged attack on God in America from within America, primarily by cultural Marxists. Perhaps the biggest engine of change in America occurred in the schools. In the 1930s, Columbia professor and committed skeptic John Dewey set America's schools on a trajectory of unbelief.
But Ben Shapiro says that 4 years at an American university is really a four-year attack on America and God. And that's the truth. Okay, so in the classroom, if you dare express your Christianity, you better be pretty confident and have a pretty strong backbone, because you will be shouted down, if not failed.
Beginning in the mid-20th century, the Supreme Court contributed to the problem in a significant way through a series of school prayer type cases, effectively banning God from the schools. Historically, the First Amendment meant no national denomination, no Church of America like the Church of England. But the High Court reinterpreted the First Amendment to mean strict separation of church and state.
It's one thing to say the government shouldn't be engaging in religious expression, but it's certainly another to say that Americans need to have a public square that has been washed free of any taint of religion. That's not what our understanding of religious freedom has been historically, and I think it's not what it should be.
I'm sure you're familiar with the book that Cleon Skousen wrote, was published in 1958, called The Naked Communist.
In his 1958 book, Skousen lists some of the goals of the communists regarding religion,
like infiltrating the churches and replacing the Bible with social religion, or eliminating prayer at school.
If we look at America in 1963, when they were read into the record, and look at America today, what do we see? And I think we see the implementation of those communist goals. And yes, it's cultural Marxism, and it's all about destroying our society.
Atheism is a fundamental tenet of Marxism. And Marx's radical heirs, especially those in academia, media, and even politics, have worked for decades to remove God as America's foundation. Once that is complete, everything is up for grabs. The next step in bringing fundamental change to America, as former President Obama often put it, is to unravel the most basic structure of our society, designed by God, the family. Our own David Wright has more.
We live in an absolutely unique time in history. One of the things that makes the early 21st century absolutely unique, and not in a good way, there's been the breakdown of the family.
The left is all about undermining the family so that they can institutionalize their new world agenda.
What Marx said, if you look at his manifesto, the Communist Manifesto, he said, we must destroy the family.
There is an ever-present threat seeking to destroy the family in America today. What is behind this attack on one of the most important pillars of society?
Why destroy the family? Because it is the bastion of private wealth. If you want to destroy wealth, you got to destroy the family that passes it on and creates a legacy. That's how wealth is controlled, is through the family. So attack the family.
The strategy to dismantle the family in America is very clear. Simply look at the 1958 book, The Naked Communist. The author, Cleon Skousen, lists 45 of the current communist goals. Goal 26 reads, present homosexuality, degeneracy, and promiscuity as normal, natural, and healthy. Goal 41 reads, emphasize the need to raise children away from the negative influence of parents. Attribute prejudices, mental blocks, and retarding of children to suppressive influence of parents.
And we know that the breakdown of the marriage culture has been the fuel for the demand side of abortion. Non-marital sex increases the rise of crisis pregnancies that frequently result in abortion. And so a bad vision of marriage places more children at risk.
But what is abortion? It's the intentional killing of a group of human beings that stand in the way of something we want. Now, we don't like to refer to it as that, but if we're actually very honest, abortion itself has its roots in eugenics, which is what was involved in the Holocaust. From the very beginning, the abortion movement, going all the way back to Margaret Sanger, we know part of her goal was to exterminate minorities and what she referred to as weeds, useless population groups.
Planned Parenthood, if you go back to its founder, Margaret Sanger, the woman who gave birth to it, it was always about eugenics. Margaret Sanger presented her work to the KKK, the Ku Klux Klan, and so there are pictures of her talking with them. And she referred to immigrants and blacks and certain people as human weeds.
Another method of attack comes in the form of labeling anyone who disagrees with a certain viewpoint as a bigot, hater, or homophobe. For instance, look at what is happening within the transgender movement.
Now, for instance, gender, male and female. Males are XY chromosome males. And that's undeniable, it's unchangeable. We live in a time where in America and the West, people really don't even have the moral courage to say, this is a man, that is a woman. And in fact, if you insist on believing in what we call a binary view of gender, male and female, you're called a hater, transphobic, a number of pejorative names.
Well, The resolve of the radical LGBTQ movement is not the end game of just treat us the same, you know, live and let live. That is not their objective. Their agenda is to vilify the opposition, silence them, and to destroy them. So they think they'll be happy and satisfied when they are silenced and destroyed. That is their end resolve. And until that's accomplished, we will not see any relief against persecuting Christians and people in churches and ministries proclaiming the good news of Jesus Christ and the hope of transformation through faith in Jesus Christ as promised by God's word.
Despite the happy face that many on the left try to put on a biological male becoming a supposed female, or vice versa, family members of transgenders can see the reality.
When I was 9 years old with my dad, I was in the kitchen actually doing dishes. And he had asked for me to come out and sit with him, said that he had something to say. And he just had said to me his desire to become a woman and how he had struggled with this from the time that he was a little boy. So as a 9-year-old girl, in my mind, I'm just thinking, why is he telling this to me? I didn't understand. And immediately, I just thought, this is, can anybody else see? You know, that he's hurting. When my father had told me that, I immediately actually started to look somewhere else for a father, because I thought, if he, you know, he's not there, who's going to teach this little girl, you know, what to look for in a man when it comes to dating and a husband and getting married, and what does that look like?
Many experts are seeing the transgender movement as the tip of the spear today in terms of the far left agenda to destroy the family.
They're not going to have a revolution over economics, but we still want that world. So we're going to do it through a cultural mechanism. We're going to fight the battle by redefining. So the methods are not changed. We have to destroy the family. We have to do what Lenin said. We have to secure the commanding heights of culture so that the artillery we fire from the mountaintops is our artillery.
Sadly, the radical left has been largely successful in their destruction of the American family. In a nation where fatherlessness is the greatest predictor of incarceration, 40% of our children are now born out of wedlock. Divorce, once virtually unheard of, is now the norm. And children are increasingly raised by video screens as parents direct most of their efforts outside the home. All of this makes children easy dupes of the state, the ultimate goal of the radical left. This then enables the overall aim of Marx's disciples, strangling freedom and imposing socialism. But one critical step remains. 2,000 years ago, when Jesus Christ stood before the Roman governor Pontius Pilate, he said he had come into the world to bear witness to the truth. Pilate responded, "What is truth?" And today we find the very notion of truth itself is under attack in our culture. Our own John Rabe brings us this report.
What we see happening on the college and university campuses, and now the high schools, public and private, some of the Christian academies, is a cultural Marxism under the guise of critical race or critical feminist theory.
For the first time in almost 250 years, America is in the midst of a revolution. While there have been outbursts of violence, it has been a mostly ideological attack on the nature of truth itself, fostered in our educational system.
There's an effort to destroy everything that was great about Western civilization. They're rewriting the history of the nation, and the end goal is to destroy America and its institutions, particularly the family.
At the root of cultural Marxism is Karl Marx's absolute division between oppressors and the oppressed.
you think about universities, they used to strive to be places where you got a marketplace of ideas, that you had a diversity of ideas. That's not what they are now. They have become indoctrination centers.
This has been seen on campus after campus, where instead of open pursuit of truth, radical students now declare ideas and speech they disagree with to be violence and thus worthy of repression.
I did not realize that there were arguments against freedom of speech. And I began to study this and discovered that it goes back to Herbert Marcuse, who was a Marxist in the 60s, who says that Marxism will never advance as long as the oppressors, the capitalists, have free speech. So they should not be allowed to speak, and they must be silent and give the other side a chance.
Cultural Marxism has spawned the popular theory called intersectionality that is driving everything from the recent street riots to the tearing down of statues to the push for open borders to the transgender movement. It comes from Marxist critical theory and is applied to race, sex, gender, nationality, and a host of other categories.
We are trained Marxists. We are super versed on sort of ideological theories.
There's one group of people that they are the oppressors, no matter what they may have done with their lives, no matter what type of life they've lived, no matter what, you are categorically an oppressor, and have a second group of people that are categorically, irrepressibly, and inescapably oppressed. And the main thing that you use to advocate this is skin color.
Critical theory also drives the recent frenzy to indiscriminately tear down statues and monuments.
Well, I think what's behind it is this progressive impulse to redefine everything in America in a negative way. So, you know, not just Confederates, which of course we hear a lot about that, tearing down Confederate statues, but also the Founding Fathers. They say, well, the Founding Fathers had various problems, and then various presidents had various problems. And every aspect of America is being redefined in a negative way. And so because of this, the progressives and people like that are trying to say, well, since everything in our past was bad, we have to junk all that, get rid of, you know, the Constitution, get rid of American history, and move forward into this new utopia that they're planning with, you know, socialism and equality and so forth.
This Marxist notion of intersectionality, in which each person plots themselves along a graph of victimhood, is why, for instance, a Christian baker who declines to participate in a same-sex wedding ceremony is attacked as an existential threat and prosecuted by the authorities.
When I came to Christ when I was about 23 years old, I turned over all the rights to my life and everything that I do, the way I raise my family, the way I work, as we open the business, the decisions that we made as far as which cakes we would create, which cakes we wouldn't. My marriage, my employees, everything in my life, I want to reflect His living through me, His love for me and my love for Him. I opened the bakery 25 years ago now, so I could incorporate my love of art and my love of baking and use cakes as a canvas. But one afternoon, back in June of 2012, two gentlemen came into the cake shop, and I sat down with them and we made our introductions. And one of them said, we're here to look at wedding cakes. And the other one said, it's for our wedding. And so I knew that this was not a cake that I could create. And so graciously tried to tell these two gentlemen that. I'm sorry, guys, I don't do cakes for same-sex weddings. They were surprised and like, well, what do you mean? So, you know, I'll sell you birthday cakes, cookies, brownies, any other custom cakes. I just can't create that cake. At which point they both stood up, stormed out of my shop, flipping me off, swearing at me. When the Civil Rights Commission ruled in my case, they said that I had to start creating cakes for same-sex weddings if I make wedding cakes. And so we stopped making wedding cakes at that point, which was about 40% of our business. 40% of our income went away. I went from 10 employees at the time down to 4, including myself.
After a prolonged legal battle waged against him by the social justice warriors in Colorado's government, Jack Phillips' First Amendment freedoms were vindicated by a 7-2 vote at the U.S. Supreme Court.
The Bible says that John 15, that we need to abide in him. And that comes from spending time with him in his word, and then he will be faithful and just. And if we abide in him and he abides in us, then we'll bear much fruit and he will be there with us.
The thing I would urge people to remember is that history is to a culture what the memory is to an individual. If one day I wake up and I've lost all my memory and I have amnesia and I don't know who I am, where I live, who these people are in my house, I'm very lost. My world is chaos. So it is if a culture doesn't know its history. It's lost its collective memory, and as a result, we'll be living in chaos. I think the degree to which we have forgotten our history or abandoned it is the degree to which we're living in chaos today.
John Rabe, who just brought us that report, joins me now in the studio. John, greetings. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Frank. It's good to be here. And this is a very important topic and an important program that we're doing. And this is a program that you instigated, that you wanted us to do. We use language about the attack on America and that there's really a war going on here. To some people watching today, that could seem like overstatement. Are you guys being hyperbolic?
Right.
Is this some kind of conspiracy theory? There is a sense, though, that this is really true. There is an attack on America. How do we mean that?
Well, if the actions you see are random, there's no plan behind it, calling it an attack might be an overstatement. But all you have to do is read the writings of Karl Marx or Robert Owen, who wrote before Marx even wrote about the destruction of the family, the destruction of religion, the dismantling of society so that a utopian socialist state could emerge. With that background of that plan articulated so many decades ago, what's happening today is the fulfillment of it. So, of course, it's an attack. Attack might be a mild word for what they're trying to do. Revolution might be a better word. The chaos, quote-unquote chaos, that we see in the street today is not chaos. It's the fulfillment of a plan to dismantle the foundations undergirding America, to replace a constitutional republic with a socialist enterprise. And the only way that can be done is through the kind of rack and ruin that we're seeing in the streets today.
These really are incredibly vital issues, and it's never been a more important time for people to understand them. So it's exciting to be involved in this project to let America know what the agenda is at play.
Yeah, John, if you want to know what the prophet Jeremiah must have felt like crying out for justice and crying out for God's truth in a generation that had abandoned it, that's what it feels like now, doesn't it? We're having this discussion, and we feel like people maybe aren't really listening with the ears to hear. But the Lord is giving us an opportunity. The Lord's giving us an opportunity to change this, to stand against these errors and defend truth. And we can't do it without our many friends and supporters. What we are seeing unfold is not a series of unconnected events or mere accidents of history. We are witnessing the unfolding of a plan, one that left unopposed could dismantle the very fabric of American society. This plan stands against the Word of God and against the welfare of our nation. We are heading to the polls this week for perhaps the most consequential election of our lifetimes. It is absolutely urgent that you know where the major parties stand on key biblical and moral issues, ones that are so important in our day. And we have put together a comparison of the two major party platforms, comparing them with each other, but more importantly, with the scriptures. You can download it instantly right now at djkm.org. We are seeing all around us the results of what happens when a nation forgets God and when He is ignored in our public life. The results can be devastating and deadly. Our own dear friend, Dr. Erwin Lutzer, has written a book that all Christians need to read. It's called When a Nation Forgets God, Seven Lessons We Must Learn from Nazi Germany. And we will send it to you right away as our thanks for your generous donation to the ongoing work of this ministry. Simply write to us at D. James Kennedy Ministries, Box 1, 1154, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33339. Or call toll free, 877-962-7677. Or go online to djkm.org. In this timely book, Dr. Luther studies seven similarities between Nazi Germany and America today. Some of them are quite chilling and caution us to respond accordingly. Discover how the takeover of education by the state, putting economic issues above moral issues, and the growth of media propaganda can quietly usher in a totalitarian state. And discover what we can do to preserve our freedoms, which means putting God back at the center. And if you're able to give a generous donation of $50 or more, we will send you the book, When a Nation Forgets God, plus the 2-DVD message set, Christ and Culture, The Road to Revival and Restoration, from Dr. D. James Kennedy. It's possible for America to repent and to turn back from her present path of destruction. Dr. Kennedy explains how in these key messages. That's the powerful book, When a Nation Forgets God, Seven Lessons We Must Learn from Nazi Germany, by Dr. Erwin Lutzer, as our thanks for your generous donation. And the book plus the 2-message DVD set, Christ and Culture, The Road to Revival and Restoration, from Dr. D. James Kennedy, as our thanks for your donation of $50 or more. And whatever you do, please go to our website to download your free comparison of the 2 major party platforms, comparing them with each other and with the Bible. Simply write to us at D. James Kennedy Ministries, Box 1-1154, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33339. Or call toll free, 877-962-7677. Or go online to djkm.org. We are living in times of great crisis, and the decisions we make this year may well determine whether we will remain a free nation governed by a constitution, or whether we will surrender to socialism, political correctness, and the tyranny of oppressive Marxists in our midst. The revolutionary genius of the American experiment is that we get to choose our own rulers. Dear friends, we must choose wisely. Thank you for joining us for Defend America 2020. May God bless you, and may God bless America.
This has been a production of D. James Kennedy Ministries.